Dave Flyer for Steve Cochran and Steve Krzanich this morning here on 720 WGN. As a kid, Chicago's own Gary Sinise was one of the founders of the Steppenwolf Theater Company and launched a series of groundbreaking productions before taking the role that would change his life in unforeseeable ways. Lieutenant Dan in the Academy Award-winning film Forrest Gump. The military community's embrace of the character of the disabled veteran was only matched by the depth of Gary's realization that America's defenders had not received all the honor, respect, and gratitude that their sacrifices deserve. Gary has worked tirelessly on behalf of those who serve this country. He has entertained more than a half million troops around the world, eventually founding the Gary Sinise Foundation, with a mission to serve and honor America's defenders, veterans, first responders, their families, and those in need. And on this Memorial Day weekend at the National Memorial Day Concert in Washington yesterday, Gary appeared in concert along with actor Joe Mantegna and conductor Jack Everly. Now, Gary's new book released earlier this year is called Grateful American, and he's joining us this morning. Welcome back to the show, Gary.
Well, thanks for having me. Good to be back.
Absolutely. Well, serving your country runs in your family. Going back to World War One, your grandfather served in France, transported wounded from the battlefield, uncles that served in World War II, your father served during the Korean War in the Navy. Did any of them at that time when you were younger or even as you were older sit down with you and really talk about those days with you?
No, not when I was younger. I so wish that I was old enough at the time that my grandfather was alive.
Yeah.
That I would have been interested in hearing about what he did in World War One, but you know, he never talked about any of that when I was a kid. No,
yeah.
He was a railroad guy. He came home from the war and went to work on the railroad on the South Side, the Indiana Harbor Belt, and worked the railroad for 40 years. His three sons all served, two in World War II, and my dad served in the Navy during Korea. But they never, you know, by the time I was old enough for them to, you know, to absorb any of the things that they would say, they were well beyond their service years, and they never talked about it. It was only later on, after I really started focusing on military service that, you know, I started asking questions. My Uncle Jerry, who was the middle brother of the three brothers, my dad's, he's older than my dad. He passed away in 1996, and he lived in Texas. He moved to Texas years ago, so I didn't get to know my Uncle Jerry or what he did. Thankfully, though, he was a writer, and he wrote about his military service. So
right.
What I know about his military service is from what he wrote about it. But I did get to spend a good amount of time with my Uncle Jack, who passed away at 90 years old. But the last 12, 15 years of his life, he was a navigator on a B-17 over Europe during the war, so I arranged for him to get on a B-17 and fly around. I did spend a lot of good time, and he talked about his war days, only up to a certain point. He saw a
right.
lot of bad stuff up in the air, and a lot of airplanes go down, and that kind of thing.
Yeah,
so he saw a lot of bad stuff.
Yeah, that generation really didn't talk about it that much. I mean, you really had to pull it out of somebody, right?
Yeah. And I was able to take him to the National World War II Museum in New Orleans and have him recorded on video. And so I,
That's
you know,
cool.
after he passed away, they gave me a copy of his video of him talking about his war years. And it was really very moving. And, you know, so I did get to spend some time with him. It was really the Vietnam veterans on my wife's side of the family that kind of gave me an education about Vietnam and what it was like for them to come home from war to a divided nation that really kind of got me started in supporting our veterans.
Yeah, so there was a Vietnam veteran, and this part of the book, it was just very moving about being at the Hilton the summer after Forrest Gump was released. You were at the Hilton on Michigan Avenue, ballroom filled with hundreds of disabled veterans and their family members. You said you witnessed a sea of men and women, men with scars and prosthetics and burn marks and crutches and wheelchairs. And they were clapping and cheering wildly because of the role you played of Lieutenant Dan. And there was a Vietnam veteran who gave you that award and said that your performance brought back that awareness of lifelong sacrifice. But you said they said back to you, and that really stopped you and said, gosh, what happened in between there that we have to actually bring it back? Appreciating our veterans.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of an odd thing. You know, it made me think quite a bit that, you know, our veterans should always be celebrated and supported and feel appreciated. And you know, we take our freedom and those who provide it for granted. We do, because we go by, unless we have a personal family member or somebody who's serving, or, you know, best friends or somebody who we're personally connected to, you know, so much of the country is kind of disconnected to that. Yet there are people out there every single day that are sacrificing, and families that are sacrificing. And, you know, September 11th really rocked my world and changed the course of my life. And when we started deploying our service members to Afghanistan and Iraq, I thought I have to be in this with them, and I want them to know that that what they're doing is appreciated. So that's why I went on this mission.
You talk about how veterans have weaved into your life pretty early on, even before some of this, even before Forrest Gump. You know, you did Tracers, and you knew there was a suicide bomber that in the early 80s that killed 220 Marines, sailors, soldiers. And that kind of hits you in a different way. And you started watching, you know, like Vietnam and television history on PBS, and started kind of ingraining yourself for these roles, but it touched you in a certain way.
Oh, no question. No question about that. It was the Vietnam veterans on my wife's side of the family, in her side of the family, that started me thinking about what the Vietnam veteran must have experienced when going off to war and then coming home to a nation that had turned its back on them, and how difficult that was. And so as artistic director of Steppenwolf at that time, back in the early 80s, I wanted to find a piece of material to direct that was based on, you know, the Vietnam experience. And I found this play that was written by a group of Vietnam veterans, and they were performing it at the time. And I went to see it in Los Angeles, and I begged them to give me the rights to do it. And I take the time to talk about this in the book, because it was so significant. You know, here I am right now, a full-on, full-time mission of service to our veterans, and the roots of that go back to my family members and the Vietnam veterans that I met in Chicago, and the experience that I had, working on this play about Vietnam, taking my cast to the VA in North Chicago to sit with a group of Vietnam veterans a few times and listen to them talk about their experiences. And here, these veterans were in there. They were in the hospital because they were going through terrible post-traumatic stress from Vietnam, but also from coming home from the war and having the country just spit on them.
Right. Yeah.
And here they are in the hospital, and they're. I'm bringing my cast there, and I want my cast to listen to the guys talk about what it's like to have served in Vietnam and to be a Vietnam veteran, because they were going to have to play these guys. And that was galvanizing for me and the cast to sit there and listen to these veterans talk firsthand about their combat experiences, and then coming home and facing a new war here at home with people that were treating them badly. So those early days working with Vietnam veterans in Chicago galvanized some things in me. And then I went off and played a Vietnam veteran in Forrest Gump. And then September 11th came along, and I knew where I needed to put my energy. And it was towards supporting the men and women who were deploying to Iraq and Afghanistan.
You must be my FNGs.
Morning, sir.
Oh, get your hands down. Do not salute me. There are goddamn snipers all around this area who love to grease an officer. I'm Lieutenant Dan Taylor. Welcome to Fort Platoon. What's wrong with your lip?
I was born with big gums, sir.
Well, you better tuck that in. I'm gonna get that caught on a tripwire. Where are you boys from in the world?
Alabama, sir.
You twins?
No, we are not relations, sir.
Look, it's pretty basic here. It's stick with me. You learn from the guys that have been in country a while, you'll be all right.
Gary, then you get the role of Forrest Gump, and I know you had an opportunity to be in a Disney movie, but... And I guess this happens with actors, too. When you reflect upon the fact that you accept a movie role, you often have to choose and think deeply about, if you've got a choice between two movies, what you want to do. And you got Walt Disney knocking at your door to do this, and then you have this opportunity where you get to play a veteran just after you, you know, years after you did this play, right? I mean, that's the opportunity.
Yeah, it was along came Forrest Gump, you know, about 10 years after I did Tracers, the play about mm-hmm. Vietnam in Chicago. And I actually got to now audition and play the Vietnam veteran. And it was interesting because I auditioned for it, and then I didn't hear anything. And I really wanted it, but I got to this place where I said, I better not think about it because I might not get it, and I don't want to get too depressed. So I'm going to go audition for other things. And so I did. I went and auditioned for like three or four other things, and it got down to the wire on two things that I didn't get. And then one I did get offered, and I got it offered it almost at the same time that I got offered Forrest Gump. Wow. You know, and Forrest Gump came back around about 3 weeks after I auditioned for it and offered me the part. And so now I didn't have anything, and now all of a sudden I have two things.
Right.
I got to make a decision between a movie called Tall Tale that Disney was doing and Forrest Gump. And I very much wanted to play the Vietnam veteran. The Tall Tale movie, I would have been played the father in a movie about a little boy, and the mother was going to be played by my wife, Moira.
Oh,
so I had
cool.
to turn down playing the father and working with my wife and went to work with Tom Hanks and did Forrest Gump. But I think it was the right move.
Absolutely. Absolutely was. 10 years after 9/11, you created the Gary Sinise Foundation. You last year raised $35 million in 1 year alone. Among its programs, construction of special adapted smart homes for severely wounded veterans that are provided mortgage-free homes. You lead the Lieutenant Dan Band and touring hundreds of shows and concert stations and military bases and war zones. I mean, you're a guy that has really put his money where his mouth is and gotten this done. And you're doing amazing, amazing things every day, man.
Well, thank you. I guess I was always the kind of guy that just takes action, you know. And maybe it's out of it came from an insecurity in some ways years and years ago when I was a kid. I was always a little intimidated because academically I just couldn't cut things, you know. I really struggled. If you look at my mom saved all my report cards from kindergarten through high school, and if you look at them, it's like a D average, you know.
I don't mean to laugh, but
it really is. It's like a D average all the way from little kid to high school. But then I get into high school and I start taking all the theater classes, and all of a sudden I'm getting A's in all these classes, theater classes. Yeah. So clearly you can just look at my report cards and figure out, like, okay, this kid found his thing, you know?
Sure.
He found his thing. In a way, I wanted to make up for that sort of insecurity about school and how I felt around the other students who were doing well and everything, and I would just kind of make stuff up and go do things.
Sure.
And like I was the kid in the neighborhood who organized the baseball team or the baseball game, or I was the kid in the band as a sixth grader who figured out what songs we were going to play and organized, you know, working out to play at the local kids' party or whatever, you know, take the lead. And so when I had the opportunity to take over as artistic director of Steppenwolf and get that whole thing going, you know, it just, I was kind of, I don't know, there was something in me that was just like, well, if you can think about it, you can go do it.
You quoted Ronald Reagan when he said, freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it to our children in the bloodstream. It must be fought for, protected, and handed on for them to do the same. And those words have stuck for you, and you live by them.
Oh, no question. And that's absolutely true. And when you go to places around the world that really don't understand what freedom is, or they have people that are willing to fight to take your freedom away rather than hand it to you or protect it for you, then you value your freedom and those who provide it that much more. And I've been to places. There's a story in the book about some of my trips to Korea and going up to the DMZ and standing on the DMZ between North and South Korea and staring at a North Korean guard, staring them in the face. I mean, they'll come right down to the borderline and stare at you and take your picture.
Wow.
I've had that happen where the North Koreans are, there's a building when you stand on the border at the DMZ, there's a building in the distance that North Koreans are inside that building and they're looking at you with binoculars and stuff. And sometimes there's somebody just standing outside the building. And sometimes they'll walk down the stairs and come all the way up to the borderline. And the border is just this little piece of concrete that goes, it's like this concrete line that's about 6 inches high. You can step right over it. And they'll come up to their side of that little concrete ridge, and you can go right up to the South Korean side and stare at them in the face.
Wow.
And it's very bizarre. And they'll take your picture, and I've done that. And, you know, you're looking at somebody who is enslaved to the supreme leader.
Yeah.
They have no concept of what living in a free society is. They don't have but the people in the South that are on the South side of that little concrete line, they're free.
They get it.
They're free. Yeah. They can go wherever they want, do whatever they want. Their economy is about the 10th greatest in the world. You know, they've been able to enjoy freedoms that the people in the North just have never had, and you value your freedom a lot more when you are face-to-face with somebody who doesn't have it.
Well, for more on the Gary Sinise Foundation, visit GarySiniseFoundation.org. Thanks for joining us, Gary, and enjoy your Memorial Day.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, top stories are next on 720 WGN.